Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Hello, America, and happy Sunday. Yes, we got this new Sunday edition. I'm really excited. What we do every Sunday, we try to grab the best interviews from my television show, the brand new television show I share with my great co-host, Amanda Head, on Real America's Voice. It's called Just News, Not Noise. We try to bring a special podcast that rips and puts together and assembles the most interesting interviews. This week, we've got the former Homeland Security Secretary, Chad Wolf. We've got the great Yale epidemiologist Harvey Risch, who's had a lot to say about it. We've got Congresswoman Kat Kamick from the great state of Florida. A lot to talk about there, about agriculture, about honesty in American politics, about the border, and Devin Nunes, the great former congressman from California, now the CEO of Trump Media and Technology Group, the group that's bringing you the Truth Social app in just a few weeks. What a lineup we've got. A whole hour of great programming for you on this Sunday. We hope you enjoy it and have a great rest of the weekend. Here we go with this week's best interviews from Just the News, Not Noise. Good evening, America, and welcome to our show here on the Real America's Voice Network. I'm your host, John Solomon, here to bring you all of the news and none of the noise. Joining with me tonight from Los Angeles is my co-host, Amanda Head. And tonight, we've got a jam-packed show focused on three of the biggest stories facing America this moment: the Russia-Ukraine crisis overseas, the ongoing security risks from Joe Biden's open border policies, and the bombshell revelations this weekend from Special Prosecutor John Durham.
Yes, that is right, John. And we have some amazing guests coming up, as you teased a moment ago, former Homeland Security Secretary in studio with you, Chad Wolf. I'm very jealous. And former Congressman Devin Nunes, who played the lead role in unraveling this whole Russia collusion narrative. So, John, I want you to go first, though, and give us the real scoop behind this Durham filing this weekend and why some people are saying that he has uncovered a modern day digital Watergate.
Yeah, well, listen, since last fall, John Durham has been building a story about what went on inside the Clinton campaign to hang the false story of Russia collusion around Donald Trump some 6 years ago. It's hard to believe it was 6 years ago. We know from the indictment last fall of former Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman that prosecutors believed the campaign, through its law firm and some computer experts, concocted a false story that Trump had a secret computer channel through Russia's Alpha Bank to talk with Vladimir Putin, hijack the election. We know Sussman's law firm had reason to believe the allegations were false. In fact, John Durham's investigation called it a red herring before he even brought it to the FBI and then the CIA. And then he lied to both federal agencies, hiding the fact that he was paid by the Clinton campaign to make the allegations or to bring the allegations forward. But this weekend, we learned a shocker. And that is that Durham's team has evidence that the computer executives helping the Clinton campaign build the false story were actually spying on Donald Trump, improperly infiltrating internet logs, showing activities at his New York home, his Trump Tower offices in Manhattan, and eventually his White House in Washington, D.C. And that revelation potentially elevates the story from a political dirty trick that misused the FBI to a potential spy scandal. And as we will explain later tonight, it raises new questions for Hillary Clinton's former foreign policy advisor, Jake Sullivan, who now is President Biden's national security advisor and the point man on that current Russia-Ukraine crisis.
You know, John, not that I think that many people in Washington, D.C. can be trusted, but Jake Sullivan is one of those guys who I just never felt like I could trust. He's a shrew from Yale. He hasn't accomplished anything other than rubbing elbows and getting in tight with the exclusive National Security Club. But before we tackle that, of course, we have our first in-studio guest, former Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Secretary, you know how important trust is in government, how important it is that the tools for spying and law enforcement be used carefully within the law. So when you heard John Durham's revelation this weekend, what first came to your mind?
Well, these are devastating revelations at the end of the day. Look, I think this is important for a couple of different reasons. One, it proves that President Trump, you know, when he was saying that they're spying on my campaign, and I think a lot of people dismiss that as a conspiracy theory or something else, that he was actually right at the end of the day. And again, this is, again, in court documents that we see today. These are not fringe conspiracy theories online somewhere. This has now been proven that it was not only spied on his campaign, but obviously when he was in the White House as well. So these are very devastating. They're very serious revelations that I think the American people need to understand and hear about. And they deserve the coverage that they're really not getting from a lot of the press that we see out there that a lot of people listen to. So I think it's important to cover and to really dig down and see what comes out of it.
Yeah, and contrary to that Leslie Stahl interview on 60 Minutes with President Trump, where she said that there was no evidence of what he was saying about being spied on, now there is evidence. And as we've all seen, if you just do a simple Google search of this story on mainstream media, they're actually placing more emphasis on Donald Trump's reaction to this story and portraying it as this bloviated response instead of actually talking about what the true story is here, which is that they spied on his campaign, not only his campaign, but his administration as well.
I think that's exactly right. And I think, and John brought this up, is a lot of those individuals are around the Clinton campaign are now in the orbit inside this administration in this White House in some very important roles. And I think their input and what they had to do or not to do with it deserves some scrutiny. Because again, these are people that are very close to the President of the United States and are advising him on a number of things. And if there was any role whatsoever in this, I think, again, the American people deserve to know the facts behind the case and what was going on back in 2016 and elsewhere.
Yeah, such an important point. In fact, there was a poll out this weekend that said even 66% of Democrats want to know really what Hillary Clinton's campaign was doing. So we're starting to get the public educated little by little. I want to pivot to a subject that you were intimately involved in as Homeland Security Secretary. And that is the border. We're now a year into the Biden border, as I call it. 2 million illegal aliens have crossed it. And I want to ask this question. We were talking about this off air. Why is it that the Biden administration wants this policy posture? Why have the border open? Let everybody go. Don't deport anyone. What's the motive behind it?
It's such a great question because we see what's happening along the border, and we're in the worst humanitarian security crisis that we have seen in anyone's lifetime and really ever. And so the question is it by design or is it just simply incompetence? And I would say that it's by design, that this is what they campaigned on. We hear the DHS secretary often say that we have a plan and we're executing on the plan, meaning the department's executing on the plan. And so you have to contend that everything that we're seeing now, the catch and release, failed catch and release policy, the hundreds of thousands of folks that are being flown into communities across this country late at night, all of this was by design and because they're not changing it. It's been 12 months of this. They're not implementing new policies, new enforcement measures. They like what's occurring now, and it was by design. And I think that's the troubling part. This is an administration that doesn't believe in immigration enforcement. They don't believe in if you come into contact with an individual who has no legal right to remain here in the United States, that you need to remove him. They simply don't believe that that is the right way to go. And so you're seeing the effects of that policy, not only along the border, but in every community across this country, whether it's the trafficking and the smuggling of human beings that we see, but it's also the illegal narcotics and the fentanyl that we see coming across that border in numbers that we've just never seen before. And it's all because they have created an atmosphere along that border that the cartel members and other folks that are smuggling individuals across know that it's wide open. And I think you continue to see more and more of it every day.
And, you know, you think about the drugs being trafficked, the humans being trafficked, but there's also a terrorist aspect as far as in the interior of our country absorbing that type of activity. And I think the statistic is 45% of the apprehensions at our southern border are from countries other than Mexico and the Northern Triangle. Pakistan, Syria, Sudan, Yemen. Talk to us about that and the dangers of bringing that in.
Well, I think that's a great statistic. So when the vice president talks about the root causes of migration, you know, previously she talks about the Northern Triangle or Central America. Well, if you look at the numbers, and you just cited them from December of 21, if she's really focusing on the root causes of migration, then she's only really focusing on about 30% of the problem, because over 40% are from countries outside of Central America and really outside of this hemisphere. And so that's the focus and that's the concern, which is, when you see certain travel patterns, and in the department we call these special interest aliens, or SIAs, which are not necessarily terrorists, not known terrorists, but they have travel patterns that mimic terrorists. So you're traveling from, you know, sub-Saharan Africa to South America, to Central America, to Mexico, to get to the United States. There's a reason that you're doing that, and trying to understand the motivation behind some of these things, folks moving, is really the question. And so that's the concerning part. When you have 2 million illegal apprehensions and another 600,000 gotaways, you're going to have bad people in there trying to embed themselves in this flow. And that's the concerning part.
Yeah, it really is. 14 known terrorist affiliated people were stopped at the border last year, according to the statistics made available last week. Mr. Secretary, I want to ask about this. All the CPB reported up to U.S. Homeland Security Secretary. They've had a kind of difficult relationship with your successor. But this weekend, there was this act of heroism. A CBP officer jumps into a river, rescues a Jamaican family that had gotten caught up into the raging waters, rescues people, and there's crickets. Nothing in the media, not a statement from the Homeland Security Department. How frustrating is that to the men and women that you used to represent?
Well, look, these folks, the Border Patrol, law enforcement officers are patriots, each and every one of them, and they're gonna do their job day in and day out, regardless of the administration, regardless of the policies. That being said, they are frustrated beyond belief, and we saw some leaked video about that. But what they see day in and day out is not only an administration not giving them the policy and the tools for them to do their job, but actually when they do it. So if you go back to the Del Rio sector and the horse patrol officers, when they actually do their job, they're gonna get jumped on from this administration saying that they're doing a bad job because the left doesn't like what they see on television. So not only are they getting, you know, prosecuted by the own administration, they'll continue to do their job at the end of the day because that's their job. And they took an oath to do that. But I think it's important to provide some leadership to make sure that they know that their leadership has their back at the end of the day.
Yeah, such an important issue. Mr. Secretary, I've got about 30 seconds left. You're doing really important work at the America First Policy Institute. Yeah. How can people follow the border policy work that you're doing there and the security work you're doing there?
Well, AmericaFirstPolicy.com. You can go to the website. You can find the Center for Immigration and Homeland Security. And again, what we're doing there is making sure that we advocate for policies that put Americans first, whether it's in Homeland Security, economic security, or national security. Putting America first and Americans first is what we should be doing day in and day out.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are nodding their heads when they hear that. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for your time today. We're going to have get you back on because this border is not going away. We're going to take that break. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. So glad you can join Amanda and I here tonight at the great show, Just the News, Not Noise. And we're going to skip a lot of noise and get right to the news. We've got an amazing guest here. We're always getting asked questions about the coronavirus, the pandemic, vaccinations, mandates, Canada, the truckers' protests, and Dr. Fauci and his many flip-flops. We got the perfect guest to get you some answers. Joining us right now, one of the world's most esteemed epidemiologists, Dr. Harvey Risch from the great Yale University. Doctor, great to have you with us.
Pleasure to be with you.
I want to go back to something that's been an amazing movement in the last couple of weeks. We're seeing several states around the country pursue legislation, executive orders, saying we're going to put a focus back on therapeutics. Everything from not punishing doctors if they choose to prescribe hydroxychloroquine or things like that, or getting monoclonal antibodies back, basically reversing what the federal government did over the last 2 years. What's driving that, and are you surprised by it?
I'm not totally surprised by it. I think what's driving it is the much more general recognition that the vaccines have lost a lot of their luster, that we've seen the waning of vaccine efficacy over time, the waning of efficacy in terms of the Omicron variant, and that really has lessened the profit motive for pushing more and more vaccination to the point where the vaccine manufacturers that also make therapeutics have switched gears, that's Merck and Pfizer, to be coming out with early treatment medications. And so because of that, that's opened the door to even addressing the question, what can be used for early treatment? And this fight about hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin that started almost 2 years ago, that has been simmering, it's still been there all this time, is now become more discussable and has allowed for less of a rejection climate. And that's why I think attorneys general and states have been able to push forward bills and policies that allow it better.
Amazing.
Dr. Risch, there are still quite a few Americans who don't want to get the vaccine. They haven't gotten it. They're not ready to jump on the train of boosters in perpetuity. And they're not anti-vaxxers. They just don't want to inject their bodies with spike proteins via mRNA. But there are alternatives out there to these mRNA vaccines. One of them I've heard a lot about is the Novavax. What's your knowledge of those at this point, moving beyond Delta and Omicron, where there's only been one death recorded? Is there really even a point in pursuing something like Novavax for people who are opposed to the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine?
Well, the Novavax was a good idea 6 months ago. It's kind of a little late in the process now. By the time FDA approves it, and I'm assuming they will approve it, by the time it's approved, in another 2 or 3 weeks, most of Omicron will be down to near zero in the United States. Is it going away completely? We don't really know, but it'll be down so low that it'll be hard to claim that we have a pandemic anymore. Now, what happens in the fall is another question, and we'll just have to watch and wait. I think that anything that comes in the fall is likely to be Omicron-derived and therefore to be mild as well, if we actually get something, because people have a very large amount of herd immunity, of population immunity for Omicron now. And so there may be some rationale for just keeping it on hold for what happens in the fall and deciding then as a better alternative compared to the genetic vaccines.
Yeah, interesting. And I heard you say something before, and it's really been at the heart of my reporting as I ask people, Did the strategy to fight the pandemic early on get driven by profit and drug companies' profit over the best science that was available to the United States government and to local doctors? I heard you mention that profit margin, deciding and making decisions. Did profit come over science in a lot of this public response?
Well, I think it was more than profit. It was economics as a whole. You can imagine that if you have a drug that reduces mortality risk by 90% or more, that costs 40 cents a dose, so $6 for a whole treatment for the illness, that there's almost no chance that a vaccine will play into that unless there's some category of people for whom the drug might not work. So the 10% who are left might want to consider getting vaccinated. And we already knew at the beginning who those people largely were: the overweight, obese, diabetics, people with chronic renal disease, immunocompromised, and so on. Those are the people who should have considered vaccination properly in a risk-benefit equation. So there was reason to develop the vaccines, but there was not reason to think that the vaccines should be used across everyone across the world, and at the same time suppressing everything else. We put all of our research dollars, all of our developmental dollars in this country into vaccines, and the little bit that was left we used for suppressing outpatient treatment instead of trying to study it. And that was a big mistake that should never have been done and will have to be addressed at some point when we're finally out of this whole pandemic.
Okay, I hate to use something that Dr. Anthony Fauci said as a premise for a question, but Anthony Fauci just said that we may be looking at a situation where we will need a new shot every 5 years. In light of what you just said and what seems to be conventional wisdom, that we have reached a level of herd immunity, do you find that to be true?
Well, so there's a couple things. The question is, are we going to see outbreaks of this virus or its mutant progeny that create serious disease, or is it going to be a common cold-like virus? We have no way of addressing that. Common cold mutates frequently. The influenza virus mutates frequently. And Omicron and COVID virus mutates frequently. We don't know where this is going in the future. However, for most viruses, the general game plan is not to kill their hosts. That doesn't promote the virus multiplying, replicating across the world. Viruses do the best when they get people out of the house and interacting with other people and making them cough and sneeze to transmit the respiratory virus. So as I've said a few times kind of flippantly, if viruses could figure out how to make people hug each other, they would do even better, but they haven't learned that trick yet. So that basically viruses always change in general in the direction of becoming milder and more transmissible. This virus already is at the high level of transmissibility, and perhaps with the stealth version, BA2 version of Omicron, has ratcheted that up just a little more. It's hard to know how much more transmissible, infectious it could be, but at the same time, it's still a relatively mild virus. Mild for doctors means that people don't get hospitalized. It doesn't mean that people don't get fevers and feel kind of sick, but it's not life-threatening. And so that's where this is likely going, and we have to watch and wait and learn empirically. There's no amount of prediction will really tell us that until we get there and have seen it for another season, when we'll see. But there's very good reason to hope and think that it might turn out to be more common cold-like and therefore not worth worrying about for anything, even treatment or vaccination.
That would be very good news, Doctor. We appreciate your expertise today, and I can't wait to get you back on the show. Folks, we're going to take that break. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back, everybody. Okay, first order of business, we have to get this out of the way. Florida Representative Kat Kamick, thank you for joining us and happy birthday.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's good to be with you both.
I got to tell you, though, on your birthday, I don't know if I would have the fortitude to go on air and do work on my birthday. So congratulations to you for having that, and we appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to do it. You know, it's not every day that you get to spend your birthday with constituents from all over your district, but also getting to do a bunch of news hits in a day. And it's pretty special. Happy to do it.
Well, we appreciate you. And this has been kind of our designated border law and order week, where we are talking to people from different departments, different states and localities about issues facing them. For you, representing Florida, the defund the police movement, how has that affected your state, your district specifically?
Well, you know, for me, it's really personal. My husband is a 15-year firefighter and SWAT medic. And so he goes out on some of the most dangerous call outs that we have in our community and surrounding areas. And to me, it's really a tough issue, because not only is this impacting my family directly, but so many families that we know that, you know, we have broken bread together over the years, and it's personal. But speaking more broadly, I think you can't defend your hometowns if you can't protect the homeland. And so there's a direct correlation to the defund police movement that we're seeing, which is affecting recruitment and retention amongst our law enforcement community. And then they're dealing with the additional criminal elements, such as the pouring of narcotics into our communities. And, you know, for example, I took my husband's SWAT vest last year to the House floor and talked about how the Democrats' defund police bill was going to take that very ballistic vest off my husband's back. It was a 1033 vest. And in response to that, my husband got written up by our department, because this is a Democrat-controlled city, and it was political retaliation against me using my husband that they wanted to go after me. So it's been a really frustrating experience for me personally. I know our local law enforcement is feeling the pressure, but nationally, I can tell you that this is a real, real challenge. I just recently met with the FOP, and they are experiencing great strains across the country of recruitment, retention, and we saw the deadliest year on record last year for law enforcement. It's really a dire situation.
Yeah, it is. The numbers were just astronomical last year. Nancy Pelosi over the weekend tried to do a tap dance and say, you know, the Democratic Party's never really been about defunding the police. That's a dead issue, but it's really not. The damage is already done. Are there efforts to begin to reverse these things in the communities? And what can Congress do, particularly if Republicans gain control? What can they do to reverse a lot of the losses in law enforcement that have been suffered in the last year?
Well, you know, I think it starts with getting our hands where Congress's role is intended to be, and that's on the purse strings. So we've seen a lot of grants going out to programs like violence interrupters. In Maryland, for example, just in the month of January, these new violence interrupters, which are essentially social workers, they respond to these very violent scenes and call outs with the intent to interrupt the violence taking place. They have seen 3 homicides of these individuals in the month of January, just in the Baltimore area alone. Wow. It's clear that these aren't working. And so we need to get rid of these programs that have no place. In one, being funded by the federal government, but then looking at ways we can be more efficient in giving resources to our local law enforcement, particularly rural areas that don't have a tax base that can meet the challenges that their law enforcement agencies are facing. So getting more creative, finding more efficient ways we can support them with the resources and training that they need. And believe me, when Republicans take the House back in November, we have a plan, and we're going to enact that plan so that law enforcement knows that we've got their 6 in Washington, D.C.
Violence interrupter. I mean, I know that these issues aren't funny, but It's just kind of ridiculous. That's like saying that Advil is a cancer interrupter. I can't imagine how anyone thought that that was a great idea to begin with. Mm-hmm. But talk to us about the bill that you introduced pertaining to human trafficking.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to borrow that analogy that you had there. That's a great way to frame that. Don't worry, I'll give you credit, though. And
no need.
On the trafficking front, you know, we have seen trafficking in every single neighborhood across America. And this is really something that is best dealt with at the community local level, because that's where it's taking place. So when I spoke with FLETC, which is the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center that conducts training for various departments around the country, they said, listen, we have a waiting list, but not enough resources to do the training for the departments on the indicators, the signs, resources for victims. And when you have a firefighter going into these situations, they can pick up on these signs very clearly. They just need to be trained how to and then what to do. Same thing with the law enforcement side. So we introduced legislation that would reallocate funds that aren't being used currently to increase the amount of training bandwidth that they have through FLETC to all these departments. So it's no cost to the departments. And we're being good fiscal conservatives by using funds that have already been appropriated and redirecting those. So we will see in this bill an additional 10,000 law enforcement agents being trained in human trafficking indicators, and then also giving them guidance on how we can best help our victims of this terrible scourge so that they can then make a case going forward and really make the situation right.
And the explosion of human trafficking in the last year is just jaw-dropping. Everybody I talk to say it's the biggest silent crisis in America today. I want to flip to something, because you are a big advocate for the great state of Florida's agricultural sector. It's having a pretty tough time now. You've got rising energy prices, which actually affects more than the gas in your car. It affects that fertilizer that we put on the crops to grow them and make them rich and good for us. And you also have some really tough weather this year, some deep freezes in Florida where we don't normally get them. Is this going to exacerbate the supply chain problems we have? And is the Biden administration engaged at all on this right now?
Well, there's a lot there. But, you know, you're hitting on so many important issues that aren't being talked about on the national stage, which I guess, you know, that's why you guys are just the news and not the noise, because the noise is the things that all the mainstream media want everyone focusing on, not the real issues like what you just hit on. You know, we're already seeing the crunch on the prices. We're seeing the bare shelves around the country. This is Biden's economic crisis here at home. You look at what's happening with the uptick in prices on fuel. That, of course, impacts fertilizer and all of the input costs that take to make a production work. So when people talk about how these farmers and ranchers are making so much money because the price of meat is so high or the cost of vegetables is so high, let me assure you that what you're seeing on the sticker is not matching up to what that farmer or rancher is bringing home. There is a massive discrepancy, because most of those in agriculture are operating on prefixed contract rates. They are determined by the market well in advance of the time that things actually make it to the grocery store. So people are operating on very thin margins. You factor in the weather concerns, like say in Florida right now, you mentioned we have some deep freeze issues. The USDA has been completely unresponsive when it comes to issues dealing with COVID, dealing with weather concerns, natural disasters. It has been like pulling teeth to get a response out of the USDA, who is fully flush with cash and resources to help assist as they are designed to do. So really, this is a bipartisan issue. This letter that we have teamed up with Darren Soto out of my home state of Florida, we're working to try to just even get a response and get some action out of USDA, because that's what they're designed to do. So I'm really proud of the work that we're doing when it comes to agriculture. This is a national security issue. If you can't feed yourself, you are not secure. And I think going into a time where we have tremendous uncertainty at the national level, we really need to get back to the basics. And having a reliable food source in our country is one of the first steps.
Absolutely. Congresswoman, we appreciate you joining us. And happy birthday. I hope you have a great rest of your birthday.
Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you guys again soon.
Yes, well.
Absolutely. We'll see you in Florida next week. All right. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back from the commercial break. Joining us now is the CEO of the Trump Media and Technology Group and the former U.S. Congressman, former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who unraveled the Russia collusion scandal, Devin Nunes. Congressman, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, great to be with you guys today.
It's an honor to have you on. Over the weekend, there were these blockbuster revelations from Special Prosecutor John Durham. And a lot of people say, that's just the Hillary Clinton campaign again. But there's a guy that was at the Hillary Clinton campaign who's now the National Security Advisor for President Biden. He told your staff in 2017, I had nothing to do with spreading false information about Donald Trump. In fact, it's ludicrous, preposterous, he said, for me to have done that. Do you think he gave us an honest answer based on what you now know?
Well, it sure doesn't look like it, because he was one of the propagandists that was out there all through the 2016 election that was promoting this in great detail. So, look, it seems like everybody who was involved in the Russia hoax was actually promoted. So if you were in the Obama White House and you participated in this hoax, you got a major promotion. You got a new job.
That's amazing. Incredible. And, you know, I'm here in California. I'm actually just down the road from your district. But I'm here in Los Angeles, a place where people really don't like to read books or articles. They just watch movies. But for a lot of these folks, they could have known so much of what you uncovered if they wanted to watch a movie, The Plot Against the President. You don't have to read to learn these things.
Yeah, you know, thank God that story was done out there. Smith did a great job. John Saw, Sarah Carter. There were so many investigative reporters who really were on this in early 2017. And we had a really good time, you know, and a lot of good people that helped us through this whole process. But sadly, and what you're seeing today is, even with this bombshell that Durham put out, this information is actually coming to light because the fake news is totally ignoring it.
It is amazing. The deafening silence is just remarkable, and it's a repudiation of the current mainstream media. You did so much to find out what the FBI and the CIA and others did wrong. You put it out there. There was a period of resistance against your findings, and then people recognized you were right. Where do you think John Durham heads with this? Do we see more people get indicted, or do we just keep getting these tantalizing court documents that come out every few months?
Well, I would actually say that, John, that we actually were so, I think, what would the right word be? We were very cautious about everything that we put out.
Yeah, you were.
So we knew it was much, much worse than what really was out there. But when you look back on it from what we knew in 2017, 2018, we were really only at the tip of the iceberg. Because now what Durham has uncovered, the whole idea that you could actually have a system in place where you could actually not only compromise a presidential candidate by stealing data from his computers in his home. This is President Trump when he was a candidate, his apartment, Trump Tower, potentially some healthcare. We still have more to learn about. But then after the fact, something we've never seen before, the actual compromising of the White House communications architecture. It is simply amazing. It is a major breach of national security. There's so many laws that have been broken here, and we made 14 criminal referrals. Hopefully all those referrals Durham is looking into. But I will say I've been impressed with the Durham investigation, largely because, unlike what you see in Washington and during my whole career, you're actually not seeing that this time. You're not seeing leaks. Remember the Mueller investigation? information. There were leaks every other day, every other day, every other day. Yep. With Durham, nothing. It's tight, nothing. And all you see are he's bringing indictments slowly, clear to fight with lawyers that are clearly causing problems, it sounds like, with this. It's the latest thing that happened on Friday night for your audience so they understand. This is really an issue of whether or not you can have one law firm represent everyone involved in this conspiracy. And Durham is basically making the argument, no, you cannot, because look at what happened here. These people are both conflicted out. So it really looks to me, not being a lawyer, but it looks to me like he's looking at conspiracy charges. But look, that's just speculation on my part. And it's great for us to be able to speculate, but it's even better that Special Prosecutor Durham is not talking to anyone. I think it gives a lot of credibility to his investigation. And of course, the fake news just ignoring this bombshell of the White House communications architecture being compromised is something that's, quite incredible.
Yeah, empty barrels make the most noise, and the fact that he's not making noise all along with leaking, I think, says a lot to people on the wrong side of the aisle on this. I wanted to get your thoughts on mainstream media and their coverage of this, because I feel kind of like we're in the twilight zone with the Ministry of Truth, and every bit of damaging information to the Clintons or Democrats in general is safeguarded by mainstream media, because you look out there for stories on this, and they're just not there.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my point. I mean, it's bad enough that the fake news is ignoring this bombshell. But remember, they were involved in this from the start. So just like I talked about all the political players that were in the Obama administration who have essentially failed upward, the same thing is true with the fake news. They have also failed upward. So a lot of the fake news artists that were involved in this Russia hoax have all been promoted to different places. And so what you're seeing is really, I think, the collapse of American journalism. It happened a long time ago when you tap that on with social media, which is why I'm in my new role now at Truth Social with the Trump Media and Technology Group. I left Congress specifically so that we can try to get the people their voice back. And so I'm working on that every day. And you may remember the Hunter Biden laptop story that was there. I know you did a lot of work on breaking that during October of 2020. That news was buried by all the fake news organizations, by social media. But the one thing that wasn't fake news is you had all of these high levels and admirals and intelligence people all came out and said, this has the hallmarks of Russian propaganda. So John, I'm waiting, and Amanda, I'm just waiting. I'm sure that will be what they come out with, because we have heard nothing from them in the last 72 hours. So I'm sure all the fake news media, they're trying to write their stories. This is Russian propaganda.
Just stunning.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to say both of you deserve to take victory laps on all of this, because you have been privy to and have reported on this information for quite a long time. And I just really hope that that there are some awards to pass around to you guys, because you've been nailing it since the beginning. So Congressman Devin Nunes, thank you so much for joining us. And we've got a lot more coming up after the break. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, folks, that wraps up our very important and fun new Sunday edition of John Solomon Reports. I hope you enjoyed some of the interviews that Amanda and I did on the TV show. We'll do it again next week on Sunday. A whole lineup of great guests that we take from TV. We make a special podcast just for you so that if you missed the TV show, you still get caught up on the best interviews. All right, God bless. Have a great weekend. And remember to tune in tomorrow when I've got Robert Ray, the independent counsel,
for the Whitewater investigation, somebody who knows more about Hillary Clinton and her commitment to law and order than most Americans do. I'm going to have him on for the whole half hour on Monday. Have a great weekend.